Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Nine Lives, Season 2, Episode 13. How are we? I hope you've all had a wonderful week. I have adored hearing and seeing what you've been up to since last week's episode, all about being brave. I had no idea that would get the response that it did. And I think these episodes are often things that I think about when I'm just out on a run, or I'm at the gym, or I'm having a moment, and they come to me. And last week's episode was so important because I do believe that bravery is probably the most important thing in life, maybe after hope. And I think that we all have the power to be brave. And if you can correct that inner voice and the way that you speak to yourself about yourself and about your capabilities, everyone has the power to be brave. And I went away from that episode feeling really, really, really motivated just saying those things. And I actually went and read some of my favorite books as well, stories about men and women who have been brave throughout the years. And it's so inspiring to think about all of our ancestors and all of the people throughout history who have kept us alive through courageous and brave acts, and the fact that in little tiny ways, we can all be brave every single day. So I have loved seeing your acts of bravery. Someone DM'd me a picture of them scheduling, like in their calendar, a doctor's appointment. Someone DM'd me the fact that they signed up for a race. Like, there were just so many different things. Sending difficult text messages to boyfriends, you know. So I think, yeah, bravery belongs to us all, and how wonderful that is. So I'm just so glad that that episode landed, because it was one of my favorites. So I am going to run Paris Marathon in 5 days. So by the time this comes out, I will have run it yesterday. So I guess you guys will know. You can let me know. Did I do it in under 4 hours? Did I survive? Yeah, I'm, you know what, today's the first day of my taper that I feel really rested. I feel full of beans, really optimistic, very positive, got no aches and pains. I just feel ready to run. This week, wanted to speak about finding wellness within depression, becoming your ideal self when you are struggling with your mental health or a mood disorder. This is something I'm asked to talk about a lot. And I did do an episode in season one, I think it was even episode two, which was growing up with depression and telling my story a little bit. And I've been asked a few times to go more into how I help myself or how people can help themselves when it comes to balancing depression and wellness, because the two, I think oftentimes people don't really, it doesn't mesh well, or they can't see the two coexisting. And I'm here to tell you that they can. It is more difficult, but the secret is being kind to yourself. And I'm going to give you some tools on how you can kind of manage your symptoms, how I manage my symptoms, and do a little bit of storytelling as well. One thing I will say about these marathon blocks, because I'm sure you guys, you know, you're on this ride with me, like the training, the taper, the race, the recovery. It's like, you know, what's it all for? But I will say those training blocks have taught me everything about discipline. They keep me sharp. They keep me on my toes. They keep me uncomfortable, because I find personally with my type of depression, when I stay still, I tend to stagnate and rot. And there's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes we all need a good rot day where we're just in bed. But to keep challenging myself and keep myself uncomfortable really helps my symptoms. They show me the spectrum of this existence. And every run I didn't want to do but I did, reaffirms again and again that I am capable, I am mighty, and I can do hard things. And so can you. Now, in season one, we spoke a little bit about the black dog. And I'm going to start this episode with a content warning, a little bit of a disclaimer. I'm going to be discussing depression and lack of motivation. I'm not a doctor, nor am I a psychiatrist. I'm just a gal trying to sow the seeds of change in other people. And I have been through, a lot with my own mental health. And although I'm not quite comfortable yet to say my diagnosis, I've been through a lot. And if you're struggling with clinical depression or what might feel like an impossible mental illness, please see a healthcare professional. Make sure to take care of yourselves. Depression is often referred to as a battle with the black dog. It comes without rhyme or reason, and it sits on your chest, dragging you back as you try to move forward, drawing all the energy, creativity, and joy from your body. My training and the way that I live my life tames my black dog, and a black dog can be trained. The first time I remember feeling depressed, I was around 9 years old. And I remember very acutely looking around and thinking, why does everyone seem so happy? And why am I feeling so sad? And I can't quite work out what's going on inside of me that I feel like I can't have a normal conversation, and I can't feel this sort of like lightheartedness that the other children seem to have, you know? And I remember at school often trying to hide myself in places around campus to get away from people so that the sadness felt, I always had this like fear that the sadness would leak onto other people and I would start to poison other people around me. So that's why I found it really difficult to make friends, because I didn't want to infect people. Now I know that's completely ridiculous, and sadness is an emotion we all feel and should feel. It's a healthy emotion, and you can't infect people with your sadness. But you know, when you're a child, you don't know any better. You don't know why you're feeling the things that you feel. And so isolation and loneliness has been something that's always followed me around, and it's a habit I'm currently trying to break. When I feel stressed or sad, I isolate, and I'm really, really trying to tell people how I feel a little bit more and be open about it, because there's no shame in struggling. The black dog is often used in conversations about depression. For many people, this metaphor describes a state of depression characterized by sadness or lack of will, including the loss of desire to partake in activities you once loved. This metaphor can be helpful for adults and children living with depression and those with loved ones experiencing the symptoms. The image of a large, intrusive black dog may more clearly identify the often difficult to see aspects of depression. This metaphor can represent the gradual overtaking of enjoyable activities you once loved, the person you once recognized in the mirror, or the life you once lived. The metaphor represents how depression does not take breaks, but may feel like a following shadow, a large, lumbering shadow, as loyal as a canine. And I think that's why the first time I read about this, it felt so validating to know that there are other people out there who feel the same way that I do about my sadness. Because, and I've spoken to so many of you about this now since season one, but some people are born with sadness built in, and it is always slightly behind me. And I do often feel like it's, you know, always waiting to jump on me. And I often have to brace myself and be like, you know, is the dog coming today? And there are so many ways that you can cultivate a lifestyle that means that you can make friends with your black dog and you can have it be a companion. Whether or not you want it there, I sometimes think it's not really up to us, but there are many, many ways that we can learn to live with it. I thought this was a really interesting story, but the origin of the black dog metaphor actually dates back to 1776. Dr. Samuel Johnson, the inventor of the English dictionary, was the first to use the term black dog about the melancholy and depression he experienced as someone diagnosed with clinical depression. The phrase was later popularized by Winston Churchill, who was often quoted as referring to a black dog when he felt unmotivated, churlish, or otherwise unproductive and unable to write stories. The black dog was said to have been the source of melancholy as well, and took the blame for some of Churchill's stumbling blocks and moments of inactivity. Throughout history, we can see as far, 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 far back as you can go, people have always struggled with their mental health. And I think one of the most tragic things about it is how common it is and yet how isolating it feels. You can speak to anyone. I mean, I don't know many people who are completely neurotypical and have never had anything or a moment where they've struggled with things. But yet we feel like we're the only ones experiencing this, and we feel like there's some sort of shame in our suffering, or there's some way or magic wand that doesn't belong to us that, you know, why can't I just work it out? Why can't I just feel better? Even though depression is exhausting and the low moods can be what feel like just complete overshadowing of everything, you can fight it. Now, I'm not talking about, and I want to make this clear. There are moments in my own mental health, and I know that other people's mental health, where they don't get to decide if they fight it. I'm not so much talking about disorders where the power is completely taken away from you and you do need to be, you know, helped in other ways. I'm talking about low mood, depressive episodes that feel like you can shake out of it when you get, you know, you get going. So you need to combat its grip on many fronts. Exercise, rest, journaling, or using some sort of creative energy, therapy, self-acceptance, connection with others, recognizing trauma and the grief that you've never allowed yourself to feel. You've heard of these things, but maybe you can't make yourself do it or do it consistently. That's the complicated thing about depression. You're fighting to become engaged outwardly while struggling to break free of depression's impulsive force. I know I should exercise, but it's hard to make myself want to do it. I don't like to journal. I do it, but nothing changes. Therapy doesn't work. It's too expensive. So you quit. And the depression remains. Very common story. And I saw this in my own journey, especially my weight loss journey, which is why it took me a really long time to get where I am today, because I would go through cycles of just feeling like nothing was working and giving up and throwing in the towel, when really all I needed to do was be gentle with myself and realize that these things are going to take me a lot longer and still are going to take me longer. And there are going to be days where I am not able to get up in the morning as early as I would like. I'm not able, for example, to keep a workout split, because there are days where I just can't face going to the gym, and that's okay. And I think this sort of like blanketing of wellness culture now, where like if I think of online wellness or wellness in general, I conjure up images of like Pilates girls. I love Pilates and girls, but this is just what I'm thinking. Pilates girls or Gwyneth Paltrow, or, you know, this kind of like blanket wellness thing where people are going to the gym and they're doing these perfectly regimented splits and all their food looks really clean. And when you're someone who struggles with your mood, sometimes it's impossible to structure yourself and live in order. I spoke about this a little bit before, but I like to call my life organized chaos, because I'm a creative, and I'm also someone who feels low sometimes. So accepting the mess and letting yourself thrive in it is sometimes the answer. Like, I'm in the mud. Pretty much 90% of the time, I'm in the mud. And allowing myself just to play in the mud and let it all unfold and let it happen and not stress myself out about mess or clutter or missed sessions or late wake-ups. You know, as a human being, you aren't designed to be regimented and perfect and keep a schedule that feels completely structured. Like, you know, we are meant to ebb and flow and go with things and be more intuitive. And I think that's why my journey has always felt really kind, because the only ever times that I've failed or I've plateaued in weight loss or fitness have been the times that I've been trying to force things. Because when you force things and it doesn't feel natural, you might get the results, but I'll tell you, you're not going to feel good. You're going to feel pretty, you know, tired and burnt out. Or you're going to go back to your old ways, and you're not going to make lasting change. And I think that's why admitting as well that we are all different. And if you are someone who is having a harder time than your neighbor or your friend, just letting that be and saying, it's okay, kid. You know, I understand, I'm here and I'm patient and I still want to be on this journey with you is a really, really healing thing to do. So one of the things I see a lot with myself and with clients and people I speak to is often before we make a change. So let's take my fitness journey, for example. I would sit on my bed or, you know, sit wherever, and I'd almost be waiting for this sign from God to feel motivated, to have this like magical motivation that everyone was talking about. So I'd wait around, wait. And you see, the trick is, and the horrible or the truth of it is that you think you have time, and we do have time. But in our young lives, I think there's something really wicked for really, really giving it a go, even if you don't feel motivated. So if you're actively trying to confront your depression but are waiting to somehow be magically motivated to change, nothing will happen. You have to make yourself do the things that are likely to help, even when you don't have a lot of energy or even hope. It's tough, but putting motivation before action is like putting the cart before the horse. Afterwards, you'll be enjoying the benefits of running a mile, walking a mile, swimming, making yourself get out of bed, having a shower. Whether it's getting dressed for the day or calling an old friend, action creates motivation, action creates energy. We've spoken a lot about this before, action creates energy, and it's something I had to discover the hard way of, you know, you can't be inactive and think things are going to change or that you're going to feel better. You have to do the action to then create the energy to feel better afterwards. And it's the age-old trick of, I don't want to go on this run. I don't want to do this thing today. But I know that on the other side of it, the good chemicals and the happy feeling and feeling like I've accomplished something and I'm feeling better about myself. I couldn't tell you, probably now there are hundreds of days that I have turned around and I have made better because I've been for a run. I mean, I could tell you of like two or three runs, really beautiful runs that stick out so much in my mind, of days where I was crying in my bed just moments before, and the sheer gritting of your teeth and putting on your trainers and getting out the door and running down to the river in floods of tears, why not, listening to Coldplay, fix you, and running along the river and just feeling like with every step, just feeling better and better and better. The same goes for cycling, walking, whatever it is that makes you feel human and alive. You know, action does create energy. Healing comes from the effect of many small changes. It's sad also to see how many people play down the changes that they make because they're, in quotes, small. So people say like, oh, this isn't really a big deal, but yesterday I went for a walk, or, you know, yesterday I ate a good meal. But any change and any risk you take to making a better life is a big deal, because you're confronting your depression or anxiety in small ways, and those changes really add up. Another thing that I see often, or have experienced myself, is giving up because you had one experience that wasn't helpful, or you had one experience where things didn't go to plan. Depression, or how I experience depression, one way of describing it is like tunnel vision. So it's very strange. It's such a weird feeling, but I often feel that there are two Cassias, or two people within me. And one is the person who is despondent and sad and low and uncreative and, you know, just can't. And the other is such a shining bright light and so fun and funny and motivated and, you know, creative. And I know them both so well, and they are such a part of myself. And I know when the low version of myself is coming, because I start to have tunnel vision where I can only see the negative. And that's the thing about life as we experience it. We don't see the world as the world is. We see the world as we are. So there are days where you can wake up and it's raining and grey and it's cold. And you look outside and you think, oh my God, it's raining, it's grey, it's cold. Like, I can't do this. I don't want to, you know, I hate this weather. I hate this place. I can't. Or there are days you wake up, it's raining, it's cold, it's grey, and you look outside and you think, gosh, I love the clouds. The rain is so refreshing. I can't wait to get out there. And, you know, I'm going to listen to some moody music. I'm going to make it cozy. So you're experiencing the world as you are, and having that duality inside of you is more often, it's more common than you think within people. And a lot of us don't understand that the yin and yang of dark and light within us is very, very common. Of course, for some of us who live with mood disorders, it's like just a lot more, you know, amplified, isn't it? So living in that tunnel vision can be very, very difficult when you do something that doesn't work, because you've mustered up the courage and motivation. Very difficult when you're struggling to do something and it falls flat, it doesn't work, or something goes wrong. For example, you decide that nothing will work because your first attempt wasn't effective, and you become paralyzed by that. So if you're thinking about this from like a inner child perspective, which I know we all know, we've done episodes about that, and we're using that within our healing journeys. So I would often say you can start to visualize yourself as a child and say, you know, would you say to them, if one idea doesn't work, don't ever bother trying to do anything else. Don't try again. Or if you can't do it easily the first time, give up. No, you would never say that to a child or your child self or someone who is trying or a friend. So persistence can pay off. Sometimes this is an excuse because it's so hard to admit that there's something wrong. You did it once and you don't want to face another so-called failure. We see it time and time again. If one method of fitness doesn't work, try another. If you don't like running, try something else. If you're having a hard time finding the right therapist or finding a friend who you can speak to, try and look around for someone else. It's all about engagement with life. Sitting in the sunshine, writing a note to someone who's in need, striking up a conversation with the six-year-old next door, striking up any conversation, in fact. Engagement is what's important. Engaging with life, with others, with nature. Engagement brings with it vitality and hope. And this is so difficult. Again, this is why it's the yin and yang and the scales constantly moving, because it's your black dog is dragging you back down and saying, get back into bed, you know, and the clouds are coming down and all you can see is the negative. But you know, truly what's going to help you is removing the blinkers and engaging with life. If you can imagine a day where you are feeling gloomy, and imagine coming out of that place and going for a walk through the park, you know, looking at the trees, maybe you're seeing things, you're, you know, breathing in the fresh air. You've got, you know, you can have sad music on. You can be crying. You don't have to be happy because you're doing something, but at least you're out and you're building momentum. You're engaging with life and you're feeling things. A lot changed for me when I started asking the question, why not me? Why can't I fight? Why can't I grit my teeth and refuse to roll over and die? I used to watch everyone else achieve their dreams in their lives. I'd watch people excel at sports, get the job they wanted, get in lovely, loving relationships, feel at ease and calm with themselves, get fit, you know, look like they were engaging and enjoying life. I always used to sit back and wonder why it was never me. I'd always say, why not me? You know, I'd always be wondering what was wrong with me and why life wasn't happening that way for me. But you just sometimes have to say, why not me? Why can't I make these changes? Why can't I go after what I want? I can tell you for a fact that change is absolutely possible for all of us, no matter what our brains are telling us. Things change when I stop thinking that's not for me, that won't happen for me, and started thinking, why not me? Why can't I do this? Sometimes you have to force yourself. Envision putting a muzzle on that great snarling dog and tame it into submission. People around you won't be able to see it, and that's okay. There are so many of us out there who feel it too. Imagine us all out walking our black dogs together. Isn't that beautiful? That releases so much shame for me. Often I'd imagine walking down the road or being in the gym, and whenever I'm feeling a little bit self-conscious or like I'm kind of not, I don't know, I'm just not feeling good and I'm not feeling attached to what I'm doing, I often imagine like, okay, what's everyone got with them? What's their baggage? And, you know, what's their black dog? And I wonder what they've been through recently. I wonder what they're currently working towards. And it kind of helps make this life feel a little bit kinder and a little bit more like we're in this together. So I thought I'd give you a little bit of science of why exercise makes us feel better when we are struggling. Because recently I've been doing this in episodes because I do think that it really, really helped me and motivates me to know what's going on inside my body, so that it makes it easier for me to do the things I don't want to do, so that I can do them and feel better about them. I'm going to try and keep this like not super sciencey, because it's nice to be able to remember these little tidbits. So if we're looking at brain science, hundreds of studies have been done and have concluded that exercise can effectively treat mild to moderate depression. And we're seeing this, I think, even more now with so much discussion being done around brain health and so much information being really accessible to all of us, which is amazing. You know, we have so many podcasts and incredible resources that will teach you about what happens in your brain when you do exercise. And more and more and more people are coming to learn that human beings need to move to feel good. And I think the more that you realize your body is like a machine and you have to treat it well in order to create the sort of destiny that you're imagining. And like, I always think it's hilarious that this thing inside of us is like just sort of piloting this meat monkey, and we're all going around trying to make ourselves feel good. And the chemicals that are released by moving around quite literally make us happy, which is, it's so, so crazy. It's the best life hack in the world. And, you know, I think one of the hardest parts about that, and especially for me and growing up, someone who, I really hated sports day. I really hated PE class, and I didn't, you know, I didn't want to join in, and I hated movement. I skipped every single sports lesson at school, every single one, because I was so embarrassed of myself. And I, again, thought that sadness was leaking onto people, so I didn't want to be around others. So I know that it's easier said than done. And my parents, like parents, teachers, everyone said, okay, you got to eat better and move a little bit more and you'll feel better and the depression will go away and then you won't fail your exams like you're failing them. And I just thought, well, no, that's hopeless. I'm hopeless. I don't want to eat vegetables and go for a run. I'm in school and I don't feel like being alive. Like, I'm not going to do those things. So arriving at a place where those sorts of self-care habits become automatic or things that you want to do can take quite a long time. And that's why I always encourage, you know, trying to fall in love a little bit with the journey and the ups and downs, because you can't just suddenly arrive at a place where you're no longer depressed. Depression or living within sadness is something that never really goes away, and you can learn to manage it, and you can definitely alleviate it, and you can definitely also use it to your advantage. I think I wouldn't swap it for the world. Some days maybe, some days, but for the most part, I think it really makes me a very deep thinker and someone who feels a lot and someone who is able to be empathic and relate to other people's struggles and, you know, be someone who never ever wants other people to feel the way I do. And I know there are so many others out there who struggle, who are some of the kindest people in the world, because when you've felt pain or you've been made to feel pain by other people, you never want anyone else to feel sad. And I go out of my way to make sure everyone feels good all of the time if I can. And that's a really beautiful thing, and that comes with the struggle. But I wish I could go back, especially to teenage me, and tell her that everything is going to be okay. Because the physical symptoms of depression, and this isn't spoken about enough in the fitness industry, but the physical symptoms of depression, whether it's weight gain, eating disorders, you know, there are so many of those that go on because we feel like we have a void to fill, right? Or we feel the need to control things because our mind feels out of control. You know, weight gain, being unfit, having unhealthier habits or substance problems all stem from struggling with our mental health. And you can't just tell someone, eat less or move more or sort yourself out, sort your life out, get up at five. It's not that simple. And I understand that there are a huge part of the world and society who don't struggle and do just need really practical advice about what macro splits to have and what time is optimal for training legs. But there is a population of us who need more. And I think there's something to be said for people who feel more or people who think more about things. Often it's harder for us to take action because everything feels so big and all-encompassing and scary. And it's much harder for us to keep routines. So, you know, the next time that you are scrolling or you are coming across advice and you're like feeling a little bit left out or like, oh, that's all very well, but what if I'm struggling to wake up in the morning, you know? Just know that there's an entire population of us who feel exactly the same way, myself included. I gave up on trying to be like those sorts of people a very long time ago, and it was the most freeing thing I ever did, because I don't hold myself to standards that I can't match myself up to and then chastise myself for not being able to keep up. I just do my best every day. I try to do my best. And sometimes my best is personal hygiene, ticking off my to-do list and going to bed. That's my best. And that's a great day. Some days is like a 36K training run and loads of amazing work things. And those are great days too. And some days I just want to stay in bed and that's fine. I think knowing that there is a power in all of us that lies dormant and you are able to access it, but sometimes it just feels so clouded and so bogged down by the weight of everything that it's really hard to see that glimmer of light or hope. And the discussion around what happens then is uncomfortable because I have been in my life at so many crossroad moments where I've kind of had to say, right, you have got two choices here. If you continue down this path, you are going to self-destruct forever. You know, you won't be here much longer. Or you try to do the hard thing and you try to get better. And getting better or feeling better is an act, it is a physical act that you have to try to choose. So if you are listening and you're having a hard day or you're feeling like you're struggling to get up and out, try to do something today for yourself and then try again tomorrow and then try again the next day. You have no idea the power of little habits and what it can do for a human being. I mean, I wish more than anything that I had known sooner just how much this sort of lifestyle can save your life. And it did save my life. And knowing now, looking back, I...
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
You know, the sadness that I was feeling was really, you know, it's a chemical thing, but it's also, it is a lifestyle thing. And sometimes it's a really difficult conversation to have with yourself that you have to say, maybe the choices you're making aren't serving you anymore. As much as it feels scary and huge when you live with depression and you're trying to change your life, the best advice I can give you is to start now. Start where you are. Start with the fear. Start with the pain. Start with the doubt. Start with hands shaking. Start with voice trembling. But just start. Start and don't stop. Start where you are with what you have. Just start. That's so important. Just start where you are with what you have. Often, I think we get overwhelmed with having everything in place and having all the right stuff in line so that, you know, you've got the shoes, you've got the notepad, you've got everything and you're ready to go and you're going to change your life tomorrow. I started with, I think, a pair of trainers that weren't even meant to be running trainers. They were from the charity shop and they were falling apart. And my Metallica t-shirt and a pair of my mom's leggings. And I went to the park and I started where I was on that day because the pain in my skull was so bad that I just needed to do something. I needed to make a change. And I went out and from there we build momentum and we go on and, you know, but starting there and starting now is life-saving and life-changing. So don't wait. Don't wait for motivation and don't wait around for your brain to feel better or things to be fixed. The fixing comes from you. You are the healer of yourself. And I think something so wonderful, and we touched on it a little bit in last week's episode about, you know, being someone who is capable and who can hold themselves and look after themselves is just so wonderful. And knowing that and knowing that you can trust yourself and build that trust is beautiful. And I hope that you do whatever it is you are struggling with. I hope you do start now, but I hope you realize that just being patient and kind to yourself when it is taking you longer, or you're having to skip days, or you're having days where you're in tears and you don't know why, it's absolutely fine to feel that way. But nothing changes. If nothing changes, you know, you've got to try and do something different for yourself. And that really does start with you. So I hope that chat about depression helped you a little bit. It's such a difficult one. I think especially the part about failures or not things not going well the first time is a really difficult one for people with depression, because we do see the negative in everything. So if you don't do something right the first time, that voice in your head and that black dog, it starts coming and telling you that you can't do something and you're useless and you're worthless and da 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 da. But really, success is the ability to go from one failure to another with no loss of enthusiasm. Mistakes teach you, mistakes make you strong, but mistakes are a chance to try again with a more educated outlook. So you never know. The next time you try, it could be the time you win. So please, 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 please don't listen to the voices in your head that tell you that failure is an ending. It really, really, really isn't. It's just the next stepping stone to success. I'm not going to end on a poem. I'm going to end on another excerpt from a book. This is a book called The Catcher in the Rye, and I'm sure you all know it, by J.D. Salinger. And this was the first book that I read when I was maybe like 12 years old that made me feel less alone. The main character in it, he felt so strange in the world. And I don't know, he just felt so sad and angry and other. And he was the first character I'd experienced that felt misplaced and was strange and didn't speak very nicely and did bad things and, you know, was just trying to stumble through his human experience. And I just loved his outlook on things. It just made me feel really, really less alone. So I absolutely love that book. I read and read and read and read and read it when I was, yeah, around 12 years old. And I know it's a cliche now. I know the book is like, you know, I know it's a cliche, but this was way before social media. And yeah, it was just me in that book and My Chemical Romance, honestly. Thank God for those two, because they really did save me. the character in the Rye, or the title, suggests that there's just this wonderful moment in the book when he's talking about this dream that he has, where he's standing on the edge of a cliff in a field of rye, and there are children running towards the end of the cliff, and he basically has to run along the edge of the cliff and catch them and throw them back into the field. And I don't know why that metaphor or that visual imagery has always stuck with me. I think because it was so powerful at such an, such a informative time in my life where that book hit me. And I always think about The Catcher in the Rye, just sort of catching things and throwing them back out. And anyway, it's a really beautiful thing. But there's an excerpt which I really love and I wanted to share with you. It's very simple. His writing is very simple. And it goes, "I think that one of these days you're going to have to find out where you want to go. And then you've got to start going there." I just love that. I just think, one of these days you are going to have to find out where you want to go, and you are going to have to start going there. And having a direction could change your life. Pick a direction and make it as crazy as you like and start going there. Doesn't matter how many steps it takes you or how many steps back there are, just hold fast towards that horizon, and you will get there. So I'll see you in Paris next week. I'll record a podcast in Paris for the post-run recap / findings, learnings from my brain. We'll see how it goes. I think we'll see. I'm not going to ruminate too much on it. With love always, always with hope, just please get out there this week. Get out there. Life is there for you. There is life to be lived. Let me know what you thought on Instagram. Any topics you want me to speak about, anything at all, let me know. Yeah, with love always. Until next week.